Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Peter, and I'm an alcoholic. This is always my favorite part of my share. It's like the volcano just blew up. I was at work this morning, and halfway through the morning, I started having this anxiety attack because I thought, what am I doing here? I feel it coming on again. I have done this more times than I care to. And it never seems to get any easier. What has evolved is the period of anxiety has gotten shorter. There's only so much to my story, and then I was at a meeting last night, and the topic of discussion was, why did you get sober, and why do you stay sober? And I left the meeting during the break for various sundry reasons, and I didn't have a chance to share, but there's always that time that you sit there and mull over what you might say if you are called upon. I got sober because I was sick and tired of wanting to die. I had spent so many years in the downward spiral, going to bed nightly and wishing that I could just die to get it over with so that I didn't have to get up the next morning and drink before I could even brush my teeth or shave or leave the house. Because unless I drank, I shook so violently that I couldn't shave. I was unemployable. A lot of my friends and family had abandoned me. I lived pretty much in isolation. And that downward spiral, that bottom, took about a year, although I had been daily drinking 24/7, moderately, all the time, for several years, searching that elusive thin line that very rarely came, where everything was all right just for the moment. And if I got to that line, it was a seesaw of going over the line and then just becoming stupidly drunk, or always being filled with that anxiety of chasing that invisible spot. And I couldn't live with it any longer. I had resigned many, many years earlier that I knew in my heart that I was alcoholic. And I was going to die alcoholic. And I wished for that death. The only thing, it was taking too damn long. It was not my own decision to get sober. I knew that I had to do it, but I had no idea how to do it. I had been drinking for so long that the physical the physical part scared me so much. Simply what would happen to me if I didn't drink constantly. I didn't have the courage or strength to possibly do it by myself. I had heard of these rooms and it had been recommended to me, but I didn't have the courage to seek them out. I was just too damn afraid to stop drinking. I used to have convulsions in the middle of the night simply because of the time that I would be in bed and I didn't put any liquor into my body. When I'd go to bed, I used to set a mug on the kitchen counter with a straw in it. Because often when I would go to bed, I would be drunk. You wake up in the middle of the night dehydrated from too much alcohol. The cotton mouth, you can hardly move your tongue. And I would need liquid. There was no way in the middle of the night that I could hold that mug to my mouth because I shook so violently. I had to use a straw and I couldn't even touch the mug. I was afraid to write my own name because I couldn't hold a pen. That's why I started to get sober. It was recommended by a friend of mine to go to rehab. Ironically, she was coming to my house at that time, hanging out in my bathroom doing heroin while she comes out of the bathroom and says, "Peter, you need to go to rehab." So I just went one step further and said, "Well, I'll show you." She got the ball rolling and then I took the bull by the horns. And why I stay sober is to be able to get up here and share my experience, strength, and hope. Oh, shit. That's another whole story. Today I have... Over this last year, I have been unemployed for the better part of the year. And it has been a struggle. But one that was actually a breeze. By being laid off from my work, it opened the door of an opportunity to try to change my career into something that I passionately fell in love with in sobriety. And that was horticulture. And I have been able to cultivate that passion in my own home, and I wanted to try to take my pastime and turn it into a living. And I ventured down every avenue that I could with plan A, B, C, and D, and I failed at changing my own career because plan D was to go back into what I had come from over the last 25 years, and that's working in the music industry, either in retail or wholesale. And it was a wonderful opportunity for a year off in year 7 of sobriety. Because I had the lucidity to be able to learn a lot of experience from that by having the courage to do what I did when I was unemployed and certainly not drinking over it and living under the poverty line. And I realized at the end of this stretch that although I was a poor man, I lived such an incredibly rich life. And it has nothing to do with money. It has all to do with fellowship and recovery and the people who are now involved in my life and what I do with my own life. And today, I wouldn't possibly trade that for anything the experience that I have gained out of that. And I wouldn't go so far as to say is there isn't any other single place I would rather be than right here tonight. But gee whiz, I do like this room. I was born and raised in the Eastern Townships on a dairy farm, and product of a Christian family. They were dirt farmers, and there was nothing special about growing up. In fact, it was rather mediocre, and I thought it was very plain folk art-like. And everything was just normal for all I knew until adolescence in high school. There was never, ever, ever any liquor or alcohol in the house at home. My alcoholism is entirely my own doing. It never came from any outside influence. When adolescence hit, I started going to a regional high school, and when I started going to high school, that's when what I recognize now was I built my first resentments. I didn't call them then that then because I didn't know any better. However, I learned quite quickly there were kids that were bussed in from neighboring towns, and so there were rural kids and town kids that went to the same high school, and I immediately felt less than being a farm boy because I sure liked what those town kids had going on. Their cliques and their streetwise, whatever it was, and it all seemed all so much more glamorous than what I had come from. And I tried very, very hard to change where I came from and what I was, and I hung out and became friends with the town kids because I resented having to spend my entire summer haying and doing chores and everything that was expected of me being a rural kid. And I began to resent my folks for being so square and so Christian, and so there was a rebellion that set in. And along with adolescence, I learned that I was nothing like all the other guys. I abhorred sports. I hated competition. I liked drama and art and the library. And so there was a fair amount of name-calling. And my favorite was Sissy, and among lots of other far more derogatory and colorful names that came along with that. And I knew it, and I was a coward, and I would just hide away from it and sulk in my own misery. When I found out exactly what it was that I was, I thought the world as I knew it had come to an end, because all that I had known of up until that point was that I was a second-class citizen, I was a sexual deviant, and I was going to burn in hell. And that's even before I ever did anything about it. And so, end of high school, and as soon as I graduated from high school, I hightailed it out of there, and I came straight to Montreal. I had to. There was nothing there for me. I didn't fit in, and I had to find out who I was. And I came to Montreal and found a gay bar and spent the next 25 years hanging out in them. And this was in the mid-70s. And times were very, very different than they are now. This is a crowd of a certain age that you know how much the times have evolved. I wouldn't wish my adolescence on any of the kids that are going through that today. However, it's certainly the media and the atmosphere and society have evolved enormously in the meantime. I mean, we have Will and Grace in our living room every day, and there's a lot of media about it. And but back then, there wasn't anything like that. It was a very underground lifestyle. There was no gay pride. There were no gay marriages. And it was underground, and it was exciting, and it was promiscuous, and it was like cock-a-doodle-doo, and away we went. There was no AIDS then, and sunrise on the mountain was like the most promiscuity I had ever seen. It was a great time, and I don't regret it at all. And I partied a lot, and I partied hard. And it wasn't long, only within the first couple of years, I got my dream job in retail music, and I stayed in that industry. And I'm back in it right now. And it was sex and drugs and rock and roll, and it was encouraged, and it was one long party, and it was terrific. Only the party got out of hand. There was a couple of regrettable incidents and broken relationships and car accidents and all the normal warning signs, but I crossed that invisible line and I couldn't stop, and it brought me to my bottom. I admire young kids today who are in their 20s or whatever arbitrary age who know that now, because they don't, they have an opportunity not to waste 25 years of their life in this downward spiral of going nowhere, not evolving. So, summer 1998, I went to Foster, and it built the foundation for me to be able to change my life. By that point, I was so beaten. As soon as I heard the word surrender, man, I was there. I had spent so long without any sort of spirituality. The only spirituality I had was the bottle. It was from you who I once heard that my insides were black, and I thought that they were it was showing on the outside. At my end, I couldn't go outside because I knew that if anybody looked at me, they would know how sick I was. And I felt it, and I knew it. And so the ability to have an open mind, and too bad that Sandy's not here, and an open heart, that was no problem. It was no problem for me. Step one I had done so many years earlier before I even knew that there was a step one. And I just welcomed it with such open arms because I had nothing to lose. I had lost everything, and it afforded me the opportunity for the very first time in my life to string together 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 days without drinking. And that was like the first time in my adult life that I could ever remember that I had not gone a day without drinking. And along with without drinking came a physiological feeling of well-being. Well, let me tell you, the pink cloud that I got out of that whole experience was absolutely incredible. I remember distinctly, and always will, my first spiritual awakening. It was 3 or 4 weeks into rehab, and I was home in St. Henry for the weekend, and an old drinking buddy had come to visit, and we were walking through a park in St. Henry, and he said, look, next weekend the wife and kids are going to be out of town and I'm going to be home alone, so why don't you come and stay at my house and we can hang out come and stay at my house. And the first thing that crossed my mind is, oh God, I can't do that. He's going to be getting up and having cornflakes, and I'm going to be opening a bottle of beer. And we're walking through this park, and all of a sudden I stopped in my tracks. And I thought, wait a minute. I've gone 21 or 24 days without a drink for the very first time in my adult life. And just like, it was like the clouds parted and everything turned technicolor. And I said, oh my God, I can do this. And there has been no turning back. I believe that was the moment that my desire to drink was lifted. That was the moment when the fear vanished. One of my biggest fears was, how in hell can I ever live without drinking? Because that's all I ever knew, was anywhere I went, anything that I did, anyone that I was with, it always involved drinking. And now I recognize that the freedom of choice is something that's like phenomenal that comes along with sobriety. Because I have the freedom to choose now to do exactly what I want to do without the burden of drinking along the way. So I did everything that I was told to do. Some things slower and some things right away. I joined a home group and got a sponsor, and it was before Christmas. I got sober in July, and it was before Christmas of that same year. I had done step 4 and step 5, and that was such an incredible awakening. I recognize a lot of that now. I didn't know exactly what happened then, and there's been evolution in the meantime, but digging through all of that garbage and sorting it out, it's so much clearer to me now than it was then. I had spent years drinking to try to drown myself and my own feelings because I basically loathed who I was. And that started right from the beginning of adolescence, from the time that I found out who I was and what I was. And it only took recovery and sobriety to find out that, you know, there's nothing really wrong with me. And I tried my best to be a benevolent person. And this program and this fellowship have taught me a wealth of knowledge of how to be a better person and how to live a better life. And to the best of my ability, I practice those principles in all my affairs. And at this stage of the game, I realize now that if anybody has any problem with who I am, hey, it's not my problem now. It's your own narrow-mindedness and bigotry. And I'm over it. it was all selfish and self-centered to begin with. I hated and disliked and was short-tempered and agonized over how everybody else got a better deal than I did. Well, it was all just selfishness, and it was just, I thought that I got the raw end of the stick. Well, the raw end of the stick was simply the fact that I couldn't accept myself for who I was. And it took step four and step five and continuing on in this fellowship and to realize that there's nothing wrong with me now. And that's the greatest gift that I have gotten out of recovery and sobriety, is simply feeling comfortable in my own skin and waking up every morning and being able to look in the mirror and be honest and truthful with myself and who I am. And I will go to any lengths to retain that and do that on a daily basis forever. another really, really terrific thing that has happened, which took a long time. It wasn't until year three or four where I started looking into it, and it was about spiritual progress. Well, like I mentioned, when I came in here, I had no spirituality whatsoever. Everything was just totally black. It was in the negative. And just getting used to the spiritual growth and actually doing some of those middle steps where there was a lot of God stuff going on, I had no concept of God, and I had chosen the fellowship and AA as my higher power. And so I struck out on this journey to try to figure out what all that was, and it was an inward journey, and it's been very rewarding, because I know now that God lives in my garden, and God lives in the kindness and benevolence of mankind, and in the goodness of our hearts, and also in doing the right thing. And doing the right thing isn't always easy to do. And certainly when we were drinking, the easier, softer way, or the wrong thing, was often far more prevalent. And I've learned that by doing the right thing, if you take the easier, softer way, you may get results, but they're often short-lived, and it's a temporary solution. But if you choose to do the right thing, no matter how hard it is or against your own better judgment or will, you know in your heart what is the right thing to do. And when you do the right thing, there are rewards for having done that. And don't know where that was going now. It's about this journey of spiritual growth. It's a real trip. I'm really enjoying it, and I have the ability now to be able to stand up here and actually talk about it with some kind of conviction, where I completely stayed away from it before. When I was doing those steps that required a lot of sounds very elementary, but the God thing. I always felt that I was fraudulent in doing those steps. I felt like a fraud. But now I don't anymore, because you don't hear the slogans around the rooms because they're full of bull. Like, example, if you don't get it, it will get you. And I mean, this is what has happened to me. Okay. I no longer even consider whether my cup is half full or half empty. As a result of recovery and being an active member in AA, I am grateful daily to say that my cup runneth over. If you are struggling out there, the only thing that I can say, and honestly mean, I have been rewarded with the grace of God, never having had slipped from the very last drink I ever put down. And I recognize that now, that I had very little to do with that. And so if you are struggling out there, the most important thing is to keep an open mind, keep coming back. It's redundant to say, don't drink and go to meetings, but it's true. If you open your heart to the fellowship and you open your mind to the program of AA and actually stop and think about what you're doing, and if you choose to do the right thing, there is no reason that you can't achieve what I have. Thank you very much for listening, and happy 24.